Welcome to episode 30 of the Nerd Extravaganza Podcast, the best podcast between Coruscant and the Outer Rim. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we're joined by special guest...
Angelo. Greetings, gentlemen.
Welcome, sir.
What's up?
Yo.
Well, in this uncharacteristically Star Wars-y episode of the Nerd Extravaganza Podcast, I say that completely tongue-in-cheek, we've got some action-packed discussion of a tabletop game in a galaxy far, far away. But before we jump into that, we should commence with our usual weekly geekly roundup. I think the batting order that we established has Brian going first. Sir, what have you been up to since last week?
Kickstarter mostly. I'm taking out a second mortgage to finance all of the things I'm interested in. I've been playing a new kind of MMO. I never play MMOs with people, so it's I'm playing a new single player game that people annoy me while I play. It's an older game, Dungeon Fighters Online. I'm trying to recruit Tom, Rick, Angelo. You're welcome.
Describe the game.
It's actually EverQuest, Warcraft, Take Your Pick meets Streets of Rage, Final Fight. Take Your Pick. It's actually pretty cool. It's punching and kicking, turning left and right, building your stats, equipping new items. Neat little change for me.
Nice. I'd be game for a non hotbar driven MMO personally.
I actually haven't bought any of the special skills since I have no idea what they do. So technically, I'm still just throwing punches. I don't think that can be considered hotbar driven.
No, I mean, you were saying throwing punches and kicks and whatever seems like it's a departure from the standard hotbar.
I think that's because I'm playing it wrong. There are a bunch of cooldowns you can buy.
I will just say, Brian, not to derail too much your roundup, but I did start playing the game, and I was basically just shooting goblins with my six shooter, because I was playing like some kind of a gunner class, and guess I'm playing wrong too, but it seemed pretty straightforward to me.
It's effective, right?
Yeah, gets the job done.
Let's see. Oh, and I went to the grand opening of a new comic book store this weekend. Heroes and Villains.
Dude, that's by me.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I showed up, bought some comics from local artists, browsed the dollar bin. Yep, that was exciting. Good day.
Any pick up any good titles? Anything specific?
What was it called? I was more interested in the artist and the art style than I haven't actually read the book yet. I think it was called Tart. I'll have to post it.
It was Tart.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Brian book.
Yeah, I'm unpredictable.
Sounds like a Brian girlfriend. Oh.
I tried.
Anything else, sir?
That is it.
Okay. Rick, what about you, man?
I have reached an all-time low, fellas.
Uh-oh.
You're not doing Avatar again, are you?
I promise that this is going to be my last week of Avatar Farm Online.
Oh, God.
I have stooped to the level of jumping on to other people's farms and helping them water and harvest their plants and stuff.
Oh my God.
I get no compensation for this. I get no XP for this. I get nothing except for the sheer satisfaction of running my avatar around somebody else's farm and doing farm work.
Angelo, I just want to fill you in. I'm sure you're a longtime listener, but Rick is basically using his like top-of-the-line gaming console to play Farmville. Just going to put that out there.
It's so addicting, dude, and I'm so close to what I think is the capped level, which is, I think, 19. I mean, I think you can go higher than that, but I'm not seeing any stuff that I can like upgrade or purchase past 18 or 19. So if that's the case, I'll probably be done after that. And I'm already at 16 and 3 quarters, so I'm real close. But today, being Tuesday, for those who I'm wrecking the magic for, we record this on Tuesdays, they came out with a patch. And dude, my secret of making money in this game was nerfed. So no more planting clover and filling up a greenhouse with 10 clovers and getting $2 of green money instead of gold money. So I've been nerfed, so game's not as fun, so I'm glad I made my millions before that happened.
So we may not have to make episode 31 an intervention?
No. No, I think I'm done. And then on some other nerdy, some actual nerdy fronts, I have been working on printing out stuff on the MakerBot for a little benchtop vacuum form machine. So I can heat up little sheets of plastic, put them over things that I either have or make, and I can whoosh, suck it down and make some cool plastic molds for stuff. So, and that's about it. MakerBot and farming, baby.
Nice. Look for our... What's the name of the game? Harvest Farm, whatever. Look for an episode based on time-killing farming games coming up.
Episode based on clovers.
Yeah. Reminds me of a meme I saw where, you know, The Simpsons looks into the future and they see a yard work simulator, and there's people like holding, you know, with goggles on, holding yard work stuff. So basically we have that now with Minecraft, and I didn't even know that Rick was so addicted to some lesser farming game, even.
Lesser? Yeah. Ouch.
Pretty much all the things our ancestors... Pretty much all the things our ancestors strive to get away from, we're now like embracing as leisure. But it's easy, we just click buttons.
So fucking true. And so wrong. But yeah, best 80 Microsoft points I ever spent, man. Avatar Farm Online by Milkstone Studios. Boom! Go get it. Come join my farm and feed my pigs.
And get nothing for it.
Rick will let you play with his Milkstone if you do that. Okay, I guess that brings it over to me. I got a lot. I'm going to bullet point this sucker and blast through it. I've got a bunch of stuff I did. First of all, I went to the new Heroes and Villains comic shop with Brian. And that comic shop fit nicely into our circuit that we seem to be doing every couple of weeks, where we basically traverse the whole county in a big circle, hitting every comic shop along the way. And it's a nice new shop. Small, but to the point. It's got a... decent selection for being right out of the gate, and it seems like they have a pretty strong, I think mainly Magic gaming scene going there, but they're open to allowing other games, maybe Star Wars miniatures, for example. Just to put that out there.
They close at 10 o'clock.
That might work against us, but, you know, if we want a day gaming session or something. Anyway, throwing that out there.
Cool.
I did join Brian in the online game he mentioned, the name of which is eluding me. What was that again, Brian?
Dungeon Fighters Online.
Yes, I went on there, shot a bunch of goblins, friended Brian, and that has been the extent of my play so far. But I'll jump back in, give that a go. It seemed cool, kind of anime, definitely anime themed, right? And cool. I was into the aesthetics of that game, I guess I should say. In addition to that, I finally beat the Nintendo Wii game Epic Mickey that I've been playing for a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of bittersweet. Yeah, I'm glad to be done. I'm glad to have finished it, but I want to play more. So hopefully Saint Mick will be dropping off the sequel to me for Christmas this year.
Oh, so you didn't pick that up when you got the Wii U?
No, I just bought I bought the Mario game and the Nintendo Land or whatever it's called, and figured I'd hold off on Epic Mickey Epic Mickey 2 because I didn't know how far I'd get in 1. Now I'm sort of went too fast, and oh well. I will suffer until I get the second one. In addition, I finished reading Ready Player One, the book that all of us here at the Nerdstravaganza podcast have been working on for some time. Brian was first to finish. I'm second. That means only Rick.
I'm close on your heels, man. I think I have maybe 70 pages left. I'm real close.
So Ready Player One, done. Playing more Halo 4, making some progress in that game. Beautiful game. The checkpoint system, meaning, you know, where you save so that when you die you respawn, I think is a little unforgiving at times. That's my only complaint. Apart from that, excellent game. Started taking advantage of my Crunchyroll anime streaming subscription. Watched the anime called Sword Art Online, which ties in very nicely to with Ready Player One in that it is all centered around an MMORPG. Very cool. Highly recommended. Happy to visit that with you guys in depth at some point in the future.
No more Panda Cafe?
You know, Polar Bear Cafe, as I think it was called, is definitely in the queue, and I will I'll jump back on that at some point in the future when I have nothing else to do. I don't know. Something wasn't exciting about that show, as novel as it was.
I'm dying to know if he ever found a job.
Oh, God. Hey, guys, that show's just as ridiculous as it sounds.
Have you guys checked out the manga thing on Xbox yet that we were talking about? The manga channel?
I had in the past, back before you mentioned it briefly, but I will revisit that before the next show, Rick, to give you my opinions on it.
Yeah, now that you got something to base it against, Crunchyroll or whatever the hell it's called. Crowns.
Crispy Crowns, correct. Yeah, I'll do that. That'd be a nice comparison. Oh, we can do a future show on online streaming services.
Cool. Do they have non-dubbed anime, the subs? Oh,
it's all subbed, my man, and they do simulcasts with Japan, meaning it comes out in Japan and it's you see it here. I think as close to simul as you can get, if simul's a verb. Is cool. Yeah, so Sword Art Online, when I catch up with that, I will be actually caught up with Japan, and will then be able to watch the episodes as they watch them.
Whoa.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
I mean, whoa!
Yes, with like the flashing lights behind you. Whoa! Right.
Yes.
Apart from that, I'm contemplating what game I'm going to play next, once I finish up Halo 4, so I have a huge library to choose from. I'll fill you guys in as soon as I figure out what's next on my agenda. Also, a little Kickstarter action. Did my pledge manager for the Reaper Miniatures Kickstarter.
Woo!
Confirmed my order for like a huge set of miniatures, and also bought a t-shirt. A cool Reaper Minis t-shirt. The Kickstarter, so, you know, a little moderation, spent a little extra money on a t-shirt, then hopped over and took care of my Relic Knights pledge manager and went bananas, buying plushies and extra factions and a manga and all kinds of other crap I just don't need, but I couldn't resist. So I will be joining Brian in that second mortgage, or whatever it was he said he was going to get finances, Kickstarter purchases, because I am going down a dark road with Kickstarter.
All right, I don't want to get us derailed, but I got to know, what other factions did you get?
I bought the Dominion? The Witch faction, like the Wizards and Witch faction.
The one that has the Librarian?
I think so, yeah. Yeah,
the one that has the little pervy guy?
Yeah, the little pervy guy. I bought that as my third faction. So I have No, N-O-H, which is Chinese dog, as we nicknamed it. I have the Pirates, which are like the Nebula Corsairs, I believe. And then I bought that faction, that third faction I just mentioned, in addition to some plushies and manga.
Cool.
So cool stuff. And, of course, apart from that, I engage in some Star Wars miniature warfare.
Yes! At a
very cool venue called Geek Extreme Entertainment in a town nearby. And the whole Ganza crew was there, to include our special guest Angelo, and we had ourselves a time playing that game, and that is what has motivated tonight's episode. That said, with you here is our special guest Angelo, and now having heard us all ramble on about all the time we've been wasting in the week, would you like to jump in with a roundup of your own?
I also have been wasting time in my own special way.
Great. But,
you know, I've been doing some D&D with another group of friends, and I was actually showed you guys those bitchin' Q Workshop dice I picked up. It's like a full set of the D&D dice that kind of have like this cool steampunk design.
Yes.
And I was more excited about those dice than pretty much anything in the past couple weeks. And that'll show you my level of dorkdom when you get so worked up over a set of dice and how cool and intricate they are.
Dude, you are preaching to the choir, man.
You know what I'm saying?
These guys taught me the appreciation of dice on my very first purchase. Was with them.
You gotta bring this shit up.
And no, I'm not gonna bring up the black cloud that surrounds it, but I will say
it's still there.
That even since then, like, I don't even play really that many games that have dice, and every time we're at a comic book store in our travels, whether it be a new store locally or a trip back from Disney or whatever, I'm so stoked to, like, I gotta go look at the dice and I gotta buy some. For what? I don't know. Just to have them, because they're cool.
So you got a collection of dice that sit unused. Yes, well, dude, thanks. We got to get a. Well, I'm basically trying to gain levels in the real world to become an eventual dungeon master of my own campaign. So I've got some ideas that may come to fruition in the future, but I still don't have enough experience with 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons yet, and we're running a campaign. It's an Eberron campaign, which I don't know if you guys are super familiar with the different worlds in D&D.
I am.
But Eberron is like kind of this steampunk-like, as if technology and the Industrial Revolution happened, only magic is the driving force instead of, you know, steam and coal. But, you know, magic is what drives everything. They got, you know, ships going across the ocean powered by trapped elementals and airships and all sorts of crazy shit like that. So that's the campaign setting we're using, and it's got on and off to a bit of a start. I mean, D&D 4th edition is kind of it puts a little more on the player versus the dungeon master. Like, you have a lot more things that you can, you know, things you have to sort out beforehand as a player, like what you're going to do, your abilities and all this kind of stuff. But I'm sure that's a topic for another thing. I also, speaking of MMOs, I, in the spirit of Dungeons & Dragons, logged on to my old Dungeons & Dragons online account. It's actually an MMO that's free to play now. And of course all my old characters were gone. I played this probably about 6 years ago though, so I can't really complain that they've been through several versions. But it's a pretty standard MMO, and when I logged onto it and played through the first little section of it, I'm like, wow, I don't think I want to play MMOs anymore.
How can you have played that and claim to be unfamiliar with 4th edition?
What's that?
How can you have played that and claim to be unfamiliar with 4th edition?
I mean, the pencil and paper edition is not is a little bit different.
A little bit.
I mean, I played it when it was the 3rd edition D&D rules. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Brian, that's the game you were playing for a while after you quit WoW, right?
Yeah, actually it is.
Oh,
actually,
really?
Yeah, DDO? Hell yeah.
Yeah, man. That's cool.
You've got some commonalities with Brian in that regard. I've played 4th edition also in the Eberron setting, so you and I have that in common.
Oh,
as well.
Cool, man. Yeah. Definitely good.
That Eberron setting sounds like Malifaux, kind of.
Malifaux spelled backwards is Eberron.
Awesome. I thought it was.
You guys were talking about animes. I've been watching a classic, Last Exile. Getting into that and, you know, just looking for some non-dubbed versions of, and maybe some recs from you guys.
We can probably do that.
Yeah, actually, we could go on at length with some recommendations, sir.
Well, I'd like to say goodbye to the Nerdstravaganza audience. It was nice to be on the show as long as I was. Looks like the guys have found a suitable replacement in Angelo. And have me on as a guest sometime. See ya!
Rick being the biggest anime fan on Earth.
I think that about does it for me and what I've been doing lately.
Well, sounds like you're going to fit right in. You may you can consider yourself welcome at the Nerdstravaganza podcast in future. I can already tell. I know I speak on behalf of everybody when I roll the welcome mat out, because you pass our test by liking all the same crap we do.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm sure I'll hate some of the stuff you guys like too, so that'll keep it interesting.
That's why we're here.
you like Star Trek better than Star Wars, so you got that going against.
Yeah, well, I will argue with you. I'll hold to that one. So,
what Star Trek do you like? What series?
Well, for me, the Next Generation is really my Star Trek.
Yeah.
The Star Trek that I identify with.
You're totally in.
Most.
Yeah, even that's even the one that I like. So there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
But I was also on with you guys on Friday at GXE, and we had a great time. I mean, you know, I gotta say, that was an epic battle between me and Tom, with the dark side prevailing.
Yes!
You know, I think we all know, we've all seen how things unfold in the Star Wars universe, and your days are numbered. The Rebels will be making a comeback.
Actually, Angelo, I don't know if you saw the post on Facebook, but we tend to post the stats of our games on the Facebook page, the Facebook group page. But we got a note from George Lucas, and he said that he didn't really like the way the original battle turned out, so he went in and made a few tweaks, and it turns out Tom actually won.
And there was a musical at the end, too, I'm sure. Actually, there was, Rick. You were singing and everything, man. It was quite heart-touching.
And my character blinked when you shot lasers at him. He added that in with CG.
Okay, but the question remains, who blinked first?
Alright.
Well, if we blink, this episode will be over before we get to the main topic, where we've made a very nice segue. I'll just say, by way of motivating that segue, that if you are looking for a nice MMORPG to play, why don't you play some Star Wars The Old Republic with me? Throw that out there. Think about that as we now segue into our main topic for the night, which is the Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game made by a company called Fantasy Flight Games. The game, as the name implies, is a miniature-based combat game where you control fighters, starfighters from the Star Wars universe, get your X-Wing, Y-Wing, versus all sorts of villainous instruments of the Empire, namely TIE fighters of various sorts. We don't like those. Boo. No, we do. We do like those. And you engage in some surprisingly pitched battles, and I gotta say, this being the first competitive game of it I've really played, you know, having sort of familiarized myself with the rules a couple times before this, I was kind of on the edge of my seat playing this game. And I think that speaks well of the game. So, though the dark side prevailed,
it was a close battle for sure. We were within a couple dice rolls of either way.
Yeah, yeah. And you used your dark powers to roll the dice your way, which is cool.
Although you managed to get a surprising number of hits using that ion cannon.
I had a pretty sweet ion cannon. That being on my Y-Wing piece. Mm. So, while we're on the topic of game pieces, so these miniature models of the ships, what are your guys' impressions? I think they're cool. I mean, I think they're really well done. Like, I was quality exceeding my expectations.
I love them. It's just the right amount of detail. I like that we don't have to paint them or anything. They just come ready to go. Not a big fan of the transparent two-piece stem that they go onto the bases, but other than that, the actual ship models I like a lot. And the best thing is that they're in scale.
Yeah, that is really, really cool. Do you find the stem to be just too flimsy or something that could break? Or
easy to lose, possibly easy to break. I think it doesn't have the universal storage accessibility like most other mini games do. I don't know if these would do as well in like a battle foam type of situation like most of the other miniatures.
I see.
Here's my own personal opinion. So it's a lot of assembling, disassembling.
Yeah, because you have a clear plastic base into which your little ship token goes, and then you've got two rods that mount on that, and then your ship mounts on top of those. So
yeah,
kind of a little construction involved every game. That's true. But
overall, I was really impressed with the level of, you know, the level of quality of all the pieces in the game. Though, I mean, I think that the miniatures look really cool, and all the cards and everything are, you know, they didn't really skimp on those aspects of it.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of cardboard pop-out pieces in the game for markers and tokens and stuff. And I was really kind of, I wasn't too sure about that until I got them. And then I was like, wow, for cardboard or pressed paper, whatever, however you want to describe it. I don't see how they could have gotten any better than the quality that they are. They've held up to a bunch of our games. No nicks, no, you know, tears, scratches, anything. So two thumbs up for me so far on those as well.
I think I've said this before. Initially, I thought the game was a little expensive because you don't really know what you're getting before you get it. And I was like, $15 for a freaking X-Wing? But it is kind of worth it, I think, because you get all the extra cards, and you get the extra, you don't get any cardboard in the ships, but it's not as bad an investment as it sounds.
Yeah, you get different pilots, you get extra add-ons, upgrades,
you're paying for quality,
stuff like that,
which I don't really mind.
Exactly. And the good thing is you don't need a million models to play this game either, so you know, that kind of helps as well.
Yeah, that game that we played with just a limited set was pretty epic, you know?
Yeah, really, it was. It was. And
what did we play with? We played with two TIE Fighters and a TIE Advanced. And,
yeah, so that was an expansion and... I mean, I'm sorry, a base and one expansion, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so...
And Tom played the same. Tom had played, well, one X-Wing, which comes with the core, and then one Y-Wing, which was an expansion as well. So, yeah, pretty fair matchup.
Yeah, and I think I agree. The price point for the quality is just great with the games. And I, for my part, speaking of dice earlier... I kind of like that they're like custom dice with like these custom faces on them that mean, you know, have meaning, you know, in the game, like the type of hit you get or sort of in certain circumstances you can re-roll depending on what comes up. I think they're cool. I don't know if it's just the color or something. So something about them appeals to me. I
love the idea. I don't like the colors. The dice feel and look cheap to me.
Yeah, dude, what are you expecting from dice?
I don't know.
The dice are decent, man.
They just seemed a little weird to me. But I will say this. I have the dice app that I got for my tablet as well as my phone. And as cool as it is, I'd rather use the in-my-hand dice and throw those around, even if I don't like the color of them. So.
To segue and maybe skip just briefly ahead, not really a segue so much as to leap ahead, we may be seeing a plethora of new dice coming out with one of Fantasy Flight's future offerings. It looks like they're going to... If what is in the beta set for their pen and paper RPG they're working on is to be believed, we could have multiple colors of custom dice coming out. So
yes, those are that's the official dice set for the new RPG that's coming out. And I guess they're putting out a bunch of stuff with that. Those are also included in the app that I have as well.
Oh, cool.
And they're under a completely separate section. You got the X-Wing dice, you've got standard set of RPG-style dice, and then you've got your Star Wars RPG dice, and you can mix and match any combination or amounts of those to use in your rolls as you need to or want to.
Cool.
So yeah, those funky shapes and colors... are definitely supposedly here to stay for this run, so we'll see.
Good. Well, we'll hopefully get back to. We'll touch on the pen and paper offering that they're going to have on the market, or that they have in beta on the market, but they're going to be putting into production soon. Hopefully, toward the end of the show. But to get back to this game, the only thing I would say missing from the pack is a play mat of some kind. It's spelled out basically. You play on what is it? A 2x2 square?
2x2 Either a 2x2 or a 3x3, depending on your point values. I think it's like up to 60 points. They suggest you play in a 2x2. More points than that, you play in a 3x3. But really, you can just kind of gauge by the number of ships you have on the table at one given time. It's yeah, probably
plus,
a better
you
gauge.
You can do just about any shape of thing. Like, I've got a circular table at my house, and that makes for a pretty cool, even though it's not 2x2, you know, it's not... regulation size, having a different shape of table, or you know, you got a longer table that could simulate like, you know, a different type of battle environment.
Mm-hmm. A trench run, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for example.
For example,
I guess I would have. Maybe they were trying to keep up with quality and they didn't want to do this, but I would have settled for just a paper. You know, a glossy paper star map that was 3x3 and had like a 2x2 border, like, you know, outlined inside it for dependents. You could alter the official playfield. It just seems like that's one kind of a big omission.
I agree. Even if it was, I mean, when we played HeroClix, you got something that was like that. And yeah, they were kind of cheesy or whatever, but it was something. It was better than playing on a plain old table. So. I'm with you there. There should have been something. Maybe one that had a... Yeah, just black with stars on it. I mean, really, because if they put anything else, you might have to get into nitpickers with rules. Be like, well, there's an asteroid there, and the rules completely, clearly state, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, yeah just a star field map would have been fine.
So, no big deal. We can always craft our own, and I know we have plans afoot for over-engineering our own playfield anyway, so...
Absolutely.
Over-engineering? No.
No, not us. But that should turn out to be awesome if we ever get it done. So, I guess that more or less concludes the sort of physical description of the game. Anything else you guys want to add before we jump on to...
Just a quick rundown of what the core set comes with. You get two TIE fighters and an X-Wing. You get a series of pilot cards. You get damage cards. And a bunch of different tokens for tracking stuff. You know, your locked target markers and stuff like that. And then you get your dice. So you get everything and anything and everything you need to play a two-player game. Yeah, except the Starfield, a two-player game in that core set. And so you buy the box set and you're ready to roll.
Yep. So with those pieces, I guess I don't want to beat our listeners up to death with all the game mechanics, but I'll give a brief synopsis of how the game's played. And if there's any, if I make any glaring omissions, feel free to jump in either during or when I'm done. Basically, it's turn-based. Do your planning phase where you've got dials that basically outline the move you're going to execute with your ship, the maneuver, and you put those face down at the beginning of the turn. Then you, in order of pilot from the lowest pilot ranking to the highest, right? Because the less seasoned pilot's going to be the most reckless, and the most seasoned is going to sit back and react to that fool's moves, right?
Right.
You execute those moves. By revealing your token, say, okay, so I'm going to make, a soft bank to the left or right, or I'm going to make a hard right turn or whatever. Execute your move. Then you take what's called an action. There are various types of those. There are dice modifying actions you can take, which will benefit you during the attack or defense phase to come later. And then I think, depending on how your ship's outfitted or maybe your pilot, I don't know all the particular... circumstances, you might have a special action you could take. For example, with my Y-Wing, I had a droid, and I would sometimes expend my action to try to have that droid repair my damaged hull during the battle. So that's sort of the action. When your action concludes, the next ship moves in order, and so it goes from worst pilot to best until all the moves and actions are complete. Then you, from there, segue into battle, and battle goes in the reverse order. The best pilot gets to take his shot, and then it goes from best to worst. So Darth Vader gets his shot before Porkins does. And Porkins is not a... Porkins isn't in the game, actually, which is actually... I'll add that to the glaring omissions category. But the attack phase comes down to rolling of the red attack dice versus the green...
agility. Defense.
Agility dice?
Green, the green agility dice.
Okay. And depending on those rolls, how the faces of those dice line up, and the number of dice you roll depends on your pilot's attack and defense ratings, as well as any modifiers that might be applied. Basically, depending on how those dice rolls turn out, a certain amount of damage is doled out by the attacker against the defender. And... so it goes from best pilot to worst. If your pilot survives the attack, eventually, hopefully, assuming there's basically a firing arc that your ship has, you can fire back at the guy that shot at you. And so that's how it goes. If you attack within your firing arc, and if you survive a better pilot's attack, you get the counterattack. I think I've more or less explained the... Oh, and then when it's all done and the smoke clears, you rinse and repeat. You start the next round, essentially.
It is, without any stretch of the imagination or stretch of the definition, it's a dogfight in space. You're just reenacting one of the infamous Star Wars dogfights.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And to that point, like, maneuvering and positioning is very important. Like, I don't know if you talked about the templates that... There's these movement templates that represent different moves your ships can make. And you lay them down and move the physical piece along through the arc of the template that it's that you chose as your movement, and it, you know, represents all these different, you know, hard left turn, hard right turn, going straight, a reverse turn, all sorts of different maneuvers that the different ships can make. And it's very position dependent because of the firing arc that you have. You have to position your ships and anticipate the moves that everyone else is going to make in order to be able to get shots off.
Yep, and it's always anticipation. That's one of the cool things, because you have to set all of your... Each ship has its own dial, the dial that Tom was referring to at the beginning of the description. There's a different one for each type of ship, and on that dial, it has a little open window, much like a HeroClix type of dial, and you turn it to choose the type of maneuver that you want. So the only types of maneuvers that you can make are the ones that are dedicated to, you know, a TIE fighter can only do a TIE fighter dial's moves. The moves on there are only available for a TIE fighter ship. But you do all this in preparation for what's gonna happen. You don't know. You set all your dials, lay them down. So you guys are, you're not like a regular miniatures game where, you know, you can kind of base what you're going to do on what the other guy's move is. These are all happening at the same time, so to speak. It's really cool.
Yeah,
I'd like to point out, you plan what you hope to do until your opponent fucks everything over.
Yes. That is the best way to put it.
I've never been in a dogfight, except on, like, BMX bikes when I was a kid, you know. But I imagine it's very much sort of anticipating what the other guy's going to do and reacting when he does something completely unexpected and trying to keep him in your firing arc.
Which sounds like it would be a train wreck. I mean, that sounds like it would be a disaster of a game. Like, how the hell did you bother to even play that? But I think the fact that the game is pretty fast-paced, like, when you're moving your ships around, you really feel like this shit's happening and taking place. It's very visual, even though it's, you know, a turn-based game. I don't know, it's... That's one of my favorite things about the game, is it's so easy to visualize this and to feel the momentum of your battle as it takes place. It's just awesome.
It's definitely a very fast-moving turn-based game, as far as turn-based games go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think once we get our rhythm down and we've kind of got the rules down in our head where we don't have to, like, you know, keep asking, oh, wait, what are we supposed to do now? I think we'll be able to get through games quickly. Which isn't to say that we want to get through them quickly, like it's a chore, but like we'll be able to then set up a new scenario and play another game and get a few games in a night,
right?
Which will be fun. And getting a few games in has certain merits, I think, because depending on the type of squad you build, there are a lot of variables at play that could just completely change the way things play out. I mean, even given the same ships, if you choose different pilots and different droids and power-ups and weapons, that could, I mean, the whole battle could unfold completely differently.
Yep.
And of course, the variability of the dice adds even more, you know.
Right, randomness. There's different kinds of pilot cards. You've got, like, your rookie X-Wing pilots. You've got, like, a standard Rogue Squadron-style pilot. Some of them are named pilots, which is a unique pilot, and you can only have one of those on a team at any given time. So these pilots are usually people that are within the canon. You've got, like, Luke Skywalker. You've got Biggs. You've got Wedge. And these guys will have a special ability that is unique to their character, which also really helps with your planning. So you've got your pilot cards that allow you to have different upgrades, and then even within the pilot cards themselves, the different pilots have different innate abilities that they bring to the table. So it's just a complete customization of your squads when you're throwing them together.
Yeah, and Angelo and I might have thrown that rule out the window and had nothing but named pilots, but that only made for more of an epic battle than...
No, that's fine. As long as you don't have the same pilots. Like, if you were teaming up, if you guys were splitting a 100-point army 50-50, and, you know, me and Angelo were on the dark side, you and Brian were both on the light side, you guys both couldn't use a...
There's only one R4-D7.
Right, there's only one Luke Skywalker. Yeah. There's only one Wedge. So, and that's like what Brian just brought up. That's another cool feature, is not only are the pilots have unique characters and can only be used one in a game. You've also got special droids like the R2-D2. Named droids are the same thing. You can only have one in the game. So it makes for some pretty badass customization.
Okay, that makes sense, because for a minute I thought maybe we'd run afoul of the rules and like you were only supposed to have one named character as like your squad leader. But yeah, okay, it makes sense. Yeah, the same guy isn't in two ships at the same time.
Exactly.
The same droid.
Exactly.
This isn't the Clone Wars.
After yeah.
Yeah, so it was some pretty cool, and we could get into the minutia of squad building, but I think that would probably be a little too much for just a verbal discussion. Suffice it to say that it's deep enough to make for some very interesting combinations. Now, one thing we've all discovered is, I don't know if... I haven't done any perusing of sort of community websites to know if there are, like, you know, agreed upon forms of play. But I think we've all sort of arrived at certain play styles based on the squads we picked. For example, I've arrived at a strategy or a play style employing the Y-Wing, wherein I use its ion cannon, which instead of being restricted... If anybody remembers the Y-Wing, it has the 360-degree rotating cannon on top of it, which is an ion cannon, which, as everyone knows in the Star Wars universe, has the effect of disabling a ship. Well, I've now got this theory that I can have that Y-Wing sort of playing a support role. It's what I call the orbiting Y-Wing theory, and I keep him out on the perimeter just harassing everybody with these ion shots, which don't do a lot of damage, but which basically keep your ship dead in the water until the next round, allowing my more offensive ships to get in a better position for the kill. So that's, you know, that's a style that I've sort of dreamed up. Whether it'll have any, you know, whether I'll meet with success employing that strategy is yet to be seen. But do you guys, I know there have been mentions of swarms and other sorts of things. Do you guys come up with any styles?
I had a similar experience with the Y-Wing, but I applied it differently. What I was trying to do with the Y-Wing was actually use it for crowd control. I was trying to use it to line up shots for my X-Wing by disabling the enemy and knowing for a fact where he would be next round. And that worked pretty well for me.
Pretty well? It worked awesome! You fucked me, man! I was fucked in space.
I didn't want to put it that way, but
so you are using your Y-Wing in kind of an offensive role. Mine was just like I was running for my life, disabling ships that were trying to kill me and repairing my hull.
You know, Brian sent me in such a frenzy with this friggin' Y-Wing attacks that I basically was completely derailed from my strategy, and all this partnering and pairing up that I had, and my swarming, not really swarming, but my reaching out to all different sides. Like, I had groups, little mini squads within my squad, all branched out all over the table. And I started seeing this thing being able to do, like, screw me up. So I was like, all right, I gotta throw all eggs into this basket. I'm gonna haul ass over there, and I'm gonna use as many guys as I can to take down this stupid Y-Wing. And just the way he had that thing upgraded, and dude, he fucked me in space, man. And he totally threw me off my game, disrupted me. Even if that thing was only there for a scare, like, it scares me now. It's a scare tactic. Like, I can't effectively plan around it because I had such a bad date with it the first time that now I'm always on guard. Like, I feel like I'm getting touched inappropriately.
So your
it's not
tie,
fun.
Your TIE swarm was sort of swatted by the Y-Wing's ion fly swatter, maybe. Good way to put it.
It was so brutal. He mentally scrambled my brain. Like, I had no clear...
Jesus, I feel bad now.
I had no clear ability to think straight anymore. I was like, I have to get this news. I was like, I'm driving down the turnpike, 145 miles an hour, and I'm swatting mosquitoes, not even paying attention to what's on the road. That's how I felt. It was awful.
How do you think I felt? The reason I had to employ my Y-Wing in a defensive, like, save its own butt, you know, fly around the map and get repaired by your droid while ion cannoning your pursuers, the reason I had to put him into that sort of a battle profile is because right out of the gate, Angelo rolls in with like the Darth Vader like cluster missile from hell attack. So this Y-Wing's got like huge amounts of shields, like it has like respectable shields and a very respectable hull strength. He like fires his cluster missile attack that takes it down to where it's like smoking and ready to crash like round one. And I'm like, what the hell was that? Like, so I trust me, I know what it's like to feel pursued.
That was definitely the up close and personal TIE swarm, you know, like basically getting those TIE fighters into position and getting close up is their best offense. You get an extra damage die when you're close up, and some of the TIE fighters have special abilities when they're close up too. And you know, use that one time use missile attack on Tom's Y-Wing and took him down a good amount.
I think I was one hit away from dying. Like, it was point-blank Darth Vader launching this once-a-game, like, cluster missile attack from hell. And I was like, God!
Yeah, that was, like, the first attack of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, my Y-Wing never really went on the offensive for the rest of the game. So it changed the whole course of things. I mean, that's what, like, I wasn't expecting anything like that. And the game could just change. So, like, you have to completely rethink mid-battle. It's cool.
Got rattled the same way I did, just on the opposite end.
Exactly, that's what I'm trying to say.
But see, now that's the kind of thing, like, I walked away from that first game thinking, like, I have no shot if I play Darkside if they're going to use a Y-Wing. But Angelo proved differently.
Right.
The Darkside prevailed.
Well, and then my X-Wing scored a pretty decisive kill against one of his TIE fighters. I'm like, and my X-Wing was, like, at full strength after that. I was like, awesome! And then he just got totally, like, waxed the next turn. Like, so your ship can just get totally, as Brian put it, you can have a Star Wars moment where a ship just gets lined up and blown the hell out of space, man.
You guys both had pretty decent upgrades on your Y-Wings. The both of you, meaning the game I had against Brian and then the game that Angelo had against Tom. And that being the droid factor. The Y-Wing can take 8 damage. So you got 3 shield and 5 hull. Is that how it works?
I believe so, yeah.
And then, so Brian had R2, which enables you to regenerate shields if you make a specific kind of move. And you have to go through shields before you get to hull damage. And then Tom had a droid on there as an upgrade that would repair hull damage. So it's just cool to see that. That seems like such an awesome upgrade that the Rebels have that the Dark Side just doesn't have. Like, we have nothing like that. It's pure, like, attack, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, we have to get a little more into the squad building, I think, which Rick has gotten a lot of... You even built a little application for squad building, which I definitely want to get into.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. I came across... Actually, my girlfriend came across... She's so awesome, man. She always finds all the cool shit for us. There was a squad building, or an army building, just a generic list builder, and it's called Battle Scribe, and I went through and I made data files for it, and we'll post all that stuff up in the show notes, and you guys can check it out. But it basically allows you to put together your lists, and then when you show up to your gaming place and decide you're going to throw down, you just, you know, open it up on your tablet or your phone, recall your list, and throw your army together. It's pretty quick, simple, and painless. It's really helpful. So we'll include that in the show notes.
We've sort of gone through the game mechanics, game pieces, sort of talked about how our games went and some sort of strategies that are emerging and which I'm sure will change as we get even more into the game. Somebody correct me if I miss any, but right now on the market you've got the X-Wing, Y-Wing, TIE Fighter, the TIE Advance,
and that's it,
right? Mm-hmm. And coming up at the beginning or in early next year, there's a new round of expansion ships coming out, those being...
We've got the A-Wing coming out, TIE Interceptor, the Slave One, and the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, name ships. So I'm not 100% sure how I feel about the name ships, but no, I feel cool about them. Let's just leave it at that. Well, if you've got named pilots already in the battle, what's the problem with having the Falcon, right?
So Porkins is going to be able to pilot the Falcon.
Wait a minute, that's true.
No, there's new rules and new movements and stuff that are coming out for the bigger ships and the two new faster ships. So there's going to be additional rules that are coming out with these new ships. I mean, just like you can't put an X-Wing pilot in a Y-Wing, it's going to be the same thing. There's a set of pilots for that class ship.
So you get like Han Solo, you get...
Mustache Boy.
What's his name? Nib-Neb or whatever, his buddy? Yeah. And you get...
Lando, I think, is in there. And Chewie's in there.
Okay. And C-3PO. No, he doesn't get that. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I want to see these ships, and I'll probably end up getting them, like, all. But to get into the community discussion, there's an opportunity to get them before anyone else and to win them, in fact, because there is an event, which I guess is sponsored by Fantasy Flight at participating retailers, called the Kessel Run event. And that is... based on my knowledge of it, a tournament, if you win it, you get what one or more of next year's as yet unavailable ships, right?
Yep. First place gets first choice. Second place gets second choice of the remaining ships. Third place gets et cetera, et cetera.
So if we break enough kneecaps and disqualify everybody else so that only Nerdstravaganza podcast members can play and friends, so we'll bring some friends, we will get all these ships before anyone else. And I think that's our plan, right?
Yep. I think here's what we do. We just all get our girlfriends or significant others or whatever, and we show up to a place and we'll be the only ones that are playing. So since we each have a core set, be like, all right, honey, I'm going to play these and you're going to play those, and then you have to let me win because Kimberly will actually beat me. She's fucking good at this game. So I have to put that out there. You need to let me win because I want the ship.
Maybe she wants the ship, though.
She probably would want the damn ship.
That's going to be an interesting betrayal, like last second win.
I know, right?
Yeah.
She's going to pull a Lando on me. We'll get four different places, and we'll go to each one of those places. And, like, you know, at one of them I'll get the Millennium Falcon, and Tom can get the Slave One, and Angelo can get the A-Wing, and Brian can get the TIE Interceptor. And then at the next one, I'll get the TIE Interceptor, and Brian can have the Falcon, and we'll just make the rounds to all the local shops.
Let's do it. We gotta do this, man. Although I'm sure it's the same time at all the shops, so we're gonna have to figure out how to make that work. Hey, can you guys reschedule for earlier? I have, like, a birthday party to go to.
Thanks. And then the other problem would be actually having that many places to play. So,
well, so before we get into places to play, which is, I guess, another prong in the community discussion, let's talk about player base or potential player base. Rick, weren't you saying you saw these game pieces for sale in a major retailer?
Dude, I saw them at Target, on the shelf at Target. I saw them on the shelf at Barnes & Noble, and I saw them on the shelf at Books A Million, which Barnes & Noble, Books A Million could actually be the same store, just different versions. But, dude, I saw it in real life. It wasn't at just a comic book store. It wasn't just at a gaming place. It wasn't just online. I mean, it was at, like, a major regular retailer store, man. That's huge!
That could bode well. That could bode well indeed. Although, I don't
definitely
know
think the game is getting... has gotten a level of popularity maybe that they were hoping for, but you know they might not have expected it to be as popular as it is.
Good for us, and we're getting in early so we can, like, be hipsters about it.
Nice.
Let's tell everybody we're sick of it. When no, God, well, we will never do that.
I liked A-Wings before they were cool.
Right. I was already done with the Y-Wing before you even discovered it. Brian, what are your thoughts on that? The major retailer exposure didn't seem to save a previous Star Wars miniature game that may have been on the market.
True.
I don't know if it's going to last. I think, especially for a miniatures game, you want community when you buy it. And I don't think going to Target, you're going to meet too many people who are like, dude, let's throw down right now. We'll just play right here on the floor. Let's
play right here in the Starbucks.
I agree with you on that. But at the same time, this game is so easy to pick up, and I don't think you need to be a giant gamer to fall in love with this game. I mean, you can just be a pure Star Wars fan and dig this game, I think.
And I think that Star Wars cachet has a lot to do with why the game's been picked up.
Oh, definitely.
Because, you know, you can make, like, Star Wars, you know, bunion removers and, you know, it's a Star Wars bunion remover kit, and it would, you know, Target would carry it, probably.
All those at Disney.
And let's admit, this is really just Star Wars-themed Wings of War.
Right, which...
Never got picked up anywhere, right.
No, that was a purely gaming store thing. You slap Star Wars on it, now you've got a much more mass-market appeal.
And the greatest thing about that is when we were playing Wings of War... All we kept saying was, dude, it'd be so awesome if this was Star Wars. And now here it is, like, 2 years later, and it is Star Wars. Awesome.
And Wings of War, for the listeners that don't know, was sort of a vintage airplane game that more or less had very similar mechanics, also made by Fantasy Flight, correct?
Yep. Right. Legit dogfight stuff, like Red Baron style.
Right.
Red Baron versus Snoopy.
Woodstock was an upgrade. He was like a droid you could add to Snoopy's plane. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I think this is cool, and I hope it gains traction, and I hope that when we go to our favorite gaming locations, we were at one this weekend where we saw some folks playing, actually. But I hope when we go to those places, we'll be able to get some competition going after we win the Kessel Run, of course. We don't want competition for that.
Of course.
But speaking of community, let's talk about the venue we chose to finally throw down and play this in a proper gaming setting, guys. Who wants to... fill the audience in on Geek Extreme Entertainment, or GXE, the place we decided to have our battle on the stars?
Well, let's just say there are a couple of places that we were able to play. We were able to play at Tate's.
Absolutely, Gaming Satellite, yes, sir.
We were able to play at FSC, Florida Super Comics. We were kind of able to play at Cool Stuff. But our biggest issue, our biggest issue with being able to find a place to play was the time in which we like to play, which is Friday night after we get home from work. We don't want to rush and have to be out of a place by 9 or 10 o'clock. You know, we want the 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning experience. So that narrowed our choices down to
at your house or my house?
Yeah, to pretty much playing. And it led to us not being able to play a lot until we found the GXE. So our original reason for wanting to play there was simply because of the hours. And then we got there, and then it was a whole new load of love happened after we got there.
I could go on about it. Angela, what were your impressions of the place?
Well, it was it's a very large venue. There's a lot of there's a lot of rooms there that were available that night for various types of gaming, and we were able to find one with no problem that was kind of perfect for the X-Wing game. They do a lot of magic there. There's like a lot of tables in the first room set up for that, and you know, a bunch of people playing all sorts of geeky games. You know, it's just kind of an interesting environment that I didn't even know really existed until we went there.
It felt like a hangout more than a store, even though you could buy stuff there.
Definitely, that's the feeling that I got. It was. You know, I talked to the people that ran it too, and they didn't seem like store owners to me. They just seemed like
your average chilled
out gamer. You know, like they're like, oh, yeah, we got microwave pizzas, man. So I thought it was overall a really cool venue, like really a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be when I heard about it.
The place is really cool. Plenty of rooms in which to play, a lot of games available right off the shelf, and pretty much a huge bulletin board where everything's scheduled a month at a time. And they welcomed us with open arms. They've got a nice storefront up front, you know, with some different games and accessories. And of course, we got the proprietor interested in the X-Wing miniatures line, so hopefully that'll be showing up on the shelves. In addition, they have a cool like concession area, which is going to be a full service like cafe before long. So we can just live there on the weekends. We don't have to leave. It's great.
They got Dr. Pepper. I'm in.
They sell Dragon magazine and have a house copy of HeroScape. It's perfect.
Right?
Yeah,
you can't beat that.
No.
Yeah, dude, I think it's got a very cool vibe.
Yeah, we go to a lot of places, and you guys know me and my stupid social anxiety issues. I am very uncomfortable 97% to 99.5% of the places that we go. This place, within 30 seconds, I was just like, hell yeah, this is my place. Everybody there was just cool, and, you know, we walked in ready to play. a game that A, they don't sell there. B, they didn't even really...
They didn't even know what it was before
right,
they showed
right.
up.
So yeah. It's like the fact that they were just so cool, like, you know, we kind of apologized a little bit, and the guy's like, yeah, you guys bought some sodas and stuff. Feel free to come back whenever you want, man. The more the merrier. And I just thought that was such an awesome attitude. Like, it was just, you know, build it and they will come kind of mentality. And he knows that we're going to spread the word even before we're on the podcast. He's like, yeah, it's, you know...
If, word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth is what makes my business thrive. So I'm happy to have you guys, no matter what game you're playing. And hey, if you get bored playing that game, I got a ton more on the shelf over there. Feel free to crack one open and just, you know, have at it. I know, it was such a cool environment in every sense of the word. I mean, you have video games, pinball machines, snacks, games that are free to play, magazines, books. I mean, the guy had basically friggin' half a library there that you could just, like, crack open and just hang out. I don't know, it was awesome. I loved it. The only thing that was missing was, rentable beds to sleep in, I guess, so you didn't have to go home.
I'm sure that's coming. Yeah, the place, I think their mission, we've talked about this in person, if not necessarily on the show, their mission seems first and foremost to be to provide a gaming venue, and then while you're there, they, you know, hey, buy some stuff from us. Whereas a lot of times the venues you find are in stores where their primary mission is, hey, buy some stuff, and here's this accommodation we've thrown together for you to do some gaming. Which isn't to criticize the places where we game, but it's to say that GXE is better in their hours say it all. They're open late to accommodate the gamer, not necessarily just confined to retail hours, you know what I mean?
Right. And, you know, normally that kind of thing scares me because that's the kind of place that doesn't stick around too long. But they've got a proven track record. They've been around for more than enough time now. You know, they've been in this location for a year and was at another location, you know, before that for an extended amount of time. So that gives me a lot of hope that they're doing something right. Because
yeah, they expanded and moved into this new location. So,
like, granted, I think there's going to be people out there that, you know, would find the place. It's in an industrial park, you know. It's an industrial type of...
It's a warehouse.
Warehouse office building turned into a gaming store / hangout / restaurant. And it seems like an oddball combination, but I think they're on the right track. It's cozy, man. It's like a cozy clubhouse. I would rather have it be how it is, a little rough around the edges and stuff like that, than to be this, you know, Starbucks-y type of place that makes me feel uncomfortable to go to. That's my two cents.
I think his bowling alley analogy worked very well, because mm-hmm. in a bowling alley, you know, you don't just go to play a game and leave.
Right.
You go to the bowling alley to bowl primarily, but you also hang out and, you know, eat dead stuff.
I could see some really cool stuff going on there, man. I'd like to see them do like a movie night or something like that. You know, do premieres of stuff, you know, like the premieres of The Walking Dead or Doctor Who, stuff that we've seen at other comic locations.
Oh,
so,
man.
So it's not necessarily a new idea, but it's definitely an idea that would, you know, get people in the door for more than just playing.
They could do that. Yeah. You know what? They have like a space where I think they could be like a screening room. That's a great idea. We should pitch that to the guy.
You know, $1,000. You know, you can spend less than $1,000 on get a DVD projector. You know, up along that back wall, boom, gigantic. I mean, the guy's got like a high school cafeteria size room for the main gaming room. So, you know, I've been there on a Friday night and seen that place packed to the hilt at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's friggin' insane, and these are all people buying into, like, you know, magic drafts and stuff. He's got to keep it packed like that every night of the week. Would be awesome. Just different events. We're gonna make this our pet project. I think we need to. It's the Nerd Extravaganza Gaming Clubhouse, GXE style.
Actually, yeah, Geek Extreme Entertainment or GXE. Where it's the city's Pompano Beach, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It comes with a very strong recommendation, and it is there's no better place to play the Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game.
They should add comics. They should do comic subscriptions there.
And actually, why not? It wouldn't probably be a thing to set up an account, right?
Probably not.
But we'll impose our will. We're going to kick the door in and tell this guy how to run his business to accommodate us. So watch out, GXE. Here we come.
You know, this podcast was going to be talking about, you know, our love of the new Star Wars game, give a little introduction to everybody, and then kind of talk about this new place that we found to play, why it's our new favorite place to play. And then we were going to kind of branch off into what would be our dream gaming place. And it's weird, man. I think we almost have it in GXE. I'm not trying to suck ass here. It's the truth. It's like, really, what more could you add? You got little private rooms. You can eat. You can drink sodas. You can play pinball. I mean, if they just added these other little things that we had, it would be like the dream clubhouse, man.
Yeah, we've kicked this idea around, you know, this dream around for so long. This place is the farthest down that road of any I've seen.
Definitely.
And I think Rick said it best. It's not a store. I think that's the secret.
Yeah, it's a venue with retail function, with a retail function as well, right?
With as much as we've talked about this, isn't it cool to like see it in real life and see that it actually works?
Yeah.
Because we've had this idea for years, man, and we're seeing it firsthand, and we're able to go there and hang out. It's awesome.
It is. It is. So wow, that's a really positive note to take us out on. We found a great new game and a great new place to play it. Anything else to add? I mean, it seems like we're already up on Cloud City 9. I don't know how much higher we can take this.
Cloud City 10.
There is no higher note than Cloud City 9. The Cloud City 10 has proven not to exist. Cloud City 10 is going to be our Star Wars Online gaming guild when I get you guys to play Old Republic with me, actually.
I'm downloading that tonight. I'll have to
yes! But all 10. There'll be 10 people in our guild. It's going to be great. Well, with that said, before I derail this, let's end it. I think that takes us to our traditional housekeeping. Angelo, we will not ask that you pick up a broom, simply that you stand aside and watch us work. For those of you who are not laser brains or scruffy nerf herders, hop on over to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, and rate us more stars than there are in a galaxy, no matter how far away it is. And while you're at it, write us a favorable review in either the Galactic Common or English.
Or you can push that walking carpet out of the way and head on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can download the show, stream the show, rate the show, leave us a comment, or you can even send us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Or you can plug the professor into Facebook and join us at facebook.com/groups/nerdstravaganza.
With that, punch it, Chewie. We're out of here.
Peace!
You're going to get some shut-in funk wherever you go, let's be honest. Welcome to episode 30 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, the best podcast between Coruscant and the Hour... Oh, I fucked that up, god damn it. Fucking Coruscant. What am I, fucking Han Solo? Coruscant. Call Han. Coruscant.
Call Princess Leia.
It's Alderaan, I mean Alderaan. God damn it. All right. Try that again. 3, 2, 1, and...